Hello, welcome to the Dear Jane podcast. Very special post-election edition of Dear Jane. Scott and I have a lot of thoughts. He lives in Missouri. I live in Colorado. Are you interrupting me already?
Yeah. Well, not only do we have thoughts, we have some inside baseball observations and info that you're probably not going to get anywhere else.
No, because we're fired up.
We're fired up on very little sleep, which is a fascinating combination.
Fired up on very little sleep in states that lost ballot initiative fights on the issue that is very near and dear to our hearts, which is pro-life. So buckle in, get ready. But before we unleash my thoughts and fury and Scott's insights and fury, I have to tell you very quickly about our sponsors for today's episode, Cogency Strategic. And Scott, you can talk about them too, actually, because I realize I usually pass it over to you for that.
I'd be happy to. Cogency Strategic is in the business of winning your campaign for life. If you are any kind of pro-life advocacy group at all that wants to influence public opinion or public votes, things of that nature, Cogency Strategic can help you change the game when it comes to reaching out to voters, reaching out to constituencies and people, and helping them understand what really is at stake. We've got to do things differently. We're going to cover that a little bit here today on what we've been seeing across the nation. Cogency Strategic is fired up about that. It's a completely pro-life team that is passionate about the issue. It's not just about, well, if we win or well, we lose. It's about protecting life. They are very, very passionate about that. So you should check them out. If you're any kind of pro-life advocacy group at all, even if you're not in campaign cycle, they can help you with education and awareness. CogencyStrategic.com.
You're going to get to hear a little bit more about that cogency difference as we get into some of the campaigns. But to kick us off, Scott, we saw a lot of crazy things last night. We're recording this on Wednesday, November 6th. There were 10 states that had either pro-life or pro-abortion ballot initiatives, most of them constitutional amendments on their ballot. Prior to this election, the pro-life movement had 7 losses when it came to these types of initiatives. Talk to us about why this election and these results were a little bit different.
I think hopefully there's starting to be a realization that when it comes to pro-life political battles, they're different from any other kind of normal traditional political battle. Because the messaging when it comes to pro-life is so layered. As we know, even if you're quote-unquote pro-life, there are multiple levels to that, right? There is different things resonate for different people. There are lots and lots of different reasons why it's unlike any other kind of political campaign. So I think hopefully slowly but surely we're starting to have a realization. We have got to come at these races differently than we approach other political races.
And significantly, because I mentioned we had 7 losses going into yesterday. Coming out of yesterday, we have 3 wins. Mm-hmm. So we saw our first statewide post-Dobbs pro-life wins, which is super exciting. So everybody in the country was talking about Florida. Because you guys know pro-life, you probably were hearing about Amendment 4 in Florida. But that was a huge win for the pro-life movement that failed. And we'll come back and talk a little bit more about that later. And then South Dakota defeated their pro-abortion attempt to add abortion to their state constitution. And then Nebraska, which we're going to come back and talk about too, had competing amendments on their ballot. The pro-life one won and the pro-abortion one failed. So that is super unique and interesting. And it's just something that other states, you know, might consider doing something like that in the future. We'll see. But yeah, just super unique and interesting.
Yeah, let's start with Florida. That obviously is a big one. And the reason it's so big is not because Florida is such a high profile state, but when you look at the money that was spent by the other side, I mean, the numbers are still coming in, and I've heard varying, you know, I mean, I've heard up over $100 million in some cases. It's substantial. They were really, really focused on Florida. But of course, the big difference there is they had a threshold in Florida that you had to hit 60% for the Constitution to be amended. Good for them. That really was a high bar, and the other side didn't get there. And so it was again another one of these amendments or the ballot language is like what we have seen elsewhere, where it was so broad. There was just enough vagueness in there. Is the vagueness a word?
Sure, it is okay. Now.
Vagueness was in there that it could be, you know, it could be interpreted lots and lots of different ways. And enough people saw through the lies and rejected that. So that's very, very encouraging.
Yeah. Jumping over to Nebraska, this one was super interesting to me. So the state of Nebraska already prohibited abortion after 12 weeks. And so the pro-life initiative that was on the ballot sought to enshrine that in the Constitution. So it was already the law there, but they wanted to protect it in the Constitution. There's exceptions for if the mother's health is at risk later in the pregnancy. But I thought that was interesting because that's some of the talking points that we hear a lot, that, you know, most of America doesn't agree with extreme on-demand abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy, which is kind of what the other competing amendment was for the pro-abortion side. So it was cool to see that that pro-life law essentially stand in Nebraska with the passing of that amendment and the defeat of the kind of on demand for any reason.
Yeah. You know, the Nebraska one's going to be interesting, and that's something that a lot of us are going to be digging into in the coming weeks, because they took an approach that has been championed by many of let's have competing measures. One that's pro-life, one that's, you know, to go against the pro-abortion one. And I think for good reason, some people were concerned about that because the voters are easy, you know, they're just confused, right? And when you saw some of the messages coming out of Nebraska, some of the ads and things like that, they would literally be vote for this, vote against this, you know, and it's so easy to be confused, but it worked. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're going to see a push for more states to do that. Again, you know, it's hard to argue with the final result because, you know, it's all about winning, and they did. And so it's going to be interesting to see if other states adopt that approach.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
You know, going back to Florida, what's interesting to me about that, and Florida is going to be what, you know, we've talked about before how the pro-life movement, somebody put it this way. We needed our Normandy Beach moment. We needed that first initial win to sort of have a playbook by which we could go from later and sort of replicate across the country. What's interesting about Florida, besides their high threshold of 60%, has been, you know, sort of looking at all the different groups that were involved in Florida and how some of that evolved. And this is where maybe this is a little bit of inside baseball that you're not going to get anywhere else, Marcy.
Oh, wow.
We worked with several groups there on the ground in Florida, multiple groups who were actively involved, spending a lot of money in trying to convey messages and things like that. What's interesting here in the aftermath is that Governor DeSantis is getting a lot of credit for his role in helping it cross the finish line. As a matter of fact, a lot of things I've seen is people basically saying it's because of him. He has been a leader. There's no question about that. I think people, if they knew the inside baseball, they'd be a little bit more hesitant to give him all the credit. You know, what we know for a fact is that his people, I think it's more accurate to say his people, were encouraging, for example, homogenization of messaging. Everybody get behind this one group, all the money people, all the different pro-life groups. Let's get behind this one group and we'll have one message and we'll go with that. And at times there were some significant pressure brought to bear on these other groups and a little bit of, I don't want to say shaming, pressure to say, hey, you need to get on board with us, right? And I'm going to say, fortunately, that didn't happen. And here's why I say that. And a lot of, you know, as we talk about all these races, not only now, but in the future, you're going to hear a lot of pro-life people say, well, we need to join together. We need to work together. And that is true. We need to cooperate. But does that mean that we need to have one group with one message and all resources and all efforts go into that, hoping it's the right message? I'm going to suggest one of the lessons out of Florida is that it's okay to have a variety when it comes to messaging and some of the efforts to communicate about the ballot initiative.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a good example of not putting all of your eggs in one basket, mm-hmm. especially in a state like Florida, but really, like, you could argue for a lot of states that are so diverse, that have so many different communities represented there, that are going to resonate with different messages. I think the risk in all being part of the same one is, what if it's the wrong,
right.
What if it's the wrong messages? And then what if you're not reaching the right people, or mm-hmm. what if you're committed to only certain strategies, but those aren't going to be the right strategies for the different groups. So I think you're right. I think diversifying in that way, make sure that all of the counties and communities and all of that are communicated to. I mean, we saw that with one of the counties, around Orlando, where, you know, we were working with groups that had ads targeted to Hispanic voters in those communities. And then it was really cool last night as we were hearing results come in to hear that county called out, and, you know, the messaging that went out to those folks there. So I think you're right. I think there's such a diversity of thought and creativity and messaging within the movement. Different groups are going to be in touch with different demographics. Mm-hmm. And I think if we try to homogenize all of that, we're going to lose some of the impact.
Yeah. I think you're always going to have this desire, people saying, let's build a coalition. Let's all, and yes, there's value in that. Of course there is. Because, you know, especially when you consider what a disadvantage we have when it comes to resources and things like that, I get that. But, I mean, for example, some of the groups that we were working with were messaging well before that DeSantis-led group. Mm-hmm. And so there's tremendous value in that. Mm-hmm. So it's not suggesting anybody did anything wrong or otherwise. I just think that we need to take a second look at, maybe it's okay to have multiple groups out there. We're all rowing in the same direction. We're all working towards the same thing. We might be saying it differently, and we're probably talking to different people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I think so too. There's a lot to be excited about today, on a national level, on statewide levels. I think this is a tremendous set of victories for the pro-life movement. Yes, we experienced loss yesterday as well. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But I think it's just good for us to take a moment and revel in the wins that we have, because those are the first ones we've had.
Yeah, and not only just the direct wins that we had in Florida and South Dakota and Nebraska, but also when you consider the politicians who ran on abortion rights, mm-hmm. you know, and all that, and they really planted their flag there. Well, and what did we hear? Roe v. Wade, or the Dobbs decision, is going to just work out to be, you're just going to be a landslide for pro-abortion lawmakers, mm-hmm. or pro-abortion politicians. Not so fast. Mm-mm. That's not the case at all. People can see through the lies, you know, of all the code words like reproductive health and all the other nonsense. Mm-hmm. So it was encouraging to see that, you know, people still value life and people still can read between the nonsense that the other side puts out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm looking forward to the national abortion ban that was promised if we voted for a certain presidential candidate. Not by that presidential candidate, right. But let's see if we can hold into that.
Yeah. So some good wins. We can finally say we actually now have a couple of examples, templates, if you will, on how we can win these races going forward. And we've said this before, and we're going to say it again. If your state has not yet had this battle, you're not immune. Mm-hmm. You're not off the hook. It's coming for you. And you need to be ready now. You cannot start preparing too early.
Yeah. Especially when funding is an issue a lot of times. We know the other side is likely always going to outspend us. The encouraging thing about that is they outspent us by a lot in Florida, and we still won. But even getting your donor bases ready, like things might seem great right now. This is coming in the same way that it came for a whole slew of conservative states this week.
Like, for example, Missouri. And we use Missouri as an example. Doesn't matter how red your state is, you are not immune. Missouri is as bright red as you can get. Up and down, they have conservative lawmakers from governor all the way down through both chambers of the legislature. Some pro-life leaders that you know, that we all know, are in Missouri, you know, are based in Missouri. And so, but yet a very, very broad pro-abortion measure passed in Missouri. Now, I am a little passionate about it because it's my home state. And this one is especially egregious because you talk about vague. And, you know, it's all about, well, it's about reproductive health. So it's far beyond abortion. I mean, it really opens the door for the transgender stuff and all of the above. Here's my frustration, and it has to do with the pro-life movement at large. And this is more a little bit of inside baseball that you won't hear a lot. I know for a fact, from direct communication, that there were a lot of pro-life donors who were told by national people. Now, I don't want to know exactly who the national people are. I have an idea. But national people were telling pro-life donors in Missouri, don't waste your time. It's not winnable. It's not going to work. We heard excuses like you're getting started too late. You don't have enough organization. So I know multiple big money people who were told, don't worry about it. It's a waste of your money by these national pro-life organizations. What happened? It passed by a minuscule amount. It barely passed. And that's so frustrating because it was winnable. It was infinitely winnable. Had not all these national people several weeks ago said, Missouri's loss, we'll just chalk it up, and told local people, focus your attention elsewhere. That's so frustrating. And it is a self-inflicted wound that we could have avoided if we, number one, we have not learned the lesson, any of us, to ignore polls. I mean, polls are almost worthless. And so I think that was one of the biggest drivers of saying, well, polling's not good, so don't give your money. Everybody who sat out is to blame for this very, very narrow defeat in Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We face kind of the opposite problem here in Colorado. And I think there were a few things at play. I think all the national people wrote off Colorado, from the start. And then I was frustrated because then at the final, in the 11th hour, the weekend before, you started seeing national pro-life groups coming out and saying, actually, there's a path to victory in Colorado because it's a tax issue, which is true. And I've lived in Colorado long enough, this baffles me. But for as liberal as the state has become, we still don't vote yes on tax issues. And there were a couple of other very like crazy anti-conservative things on our ballot that did not pass. And so there was a path to victory for us early on. And I think, yeah, these national groups are kind of just picking the one, the battles that they think are worth fighting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's indicative of the battlefield and has changed. And so the battle plan has to change. And it, going back to what you were saying earlier, Scott, this is coming to your state. Every state is going to face this battle, and we can't have outside people telling us which state battle is worth getting into. We got to engage in all of them. So we have to do a better job of organizing, of rallying the troops, of putting in the work to raise the money. But the other thing that's frustrating to me out here is whenever Colorado sees defeats like this, the messaging we hear from the other side is with every win they get, they say, oh, the people of Colorado have already decided. And that's just the biggest lie. It's like, well, you didn't make it abundantly clear when you were gathering signatures to put this on the ballot that this was even an abortion issue. You said it was about women's health care. So people had no idea what they were signing. Then the language that was approved for the ballot did not have the word tax on it. So it was not clear that people's tax dollars were going to fund abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy. So I would like to be able to hold the other side accountable and say, look, I don't think the people of Colorado decided. I don't think the people of Missouri decided. I think people are confused because of the intentionally misleading language that the other side uses. And I think we're probably discouraged, especially when we hear from outside groups saying, it's not worth it. It's a losing battle.
Yeah.
This is the battle. We got to be ready to fight it.
Well, and you have to be prepared to fight your own local battle. Mm-hmm. I think one of the traps we fall into is, okay, it's coming. All right, national organizations, well-known organizations, how can you help us? How can you save us? And they're coming in with some dated templates. And understandably, again, because of limited resources, they're having to be strategic in, okay, well, let's put money here, but not over there. You just have, at the end of the day, you're going to have to win your race yourself. It's going to be your people in your state banding together saying, not here.
Yep.
I think that's probably the biggest takeaway. That's the biggest path to victory. Yes, you can get help from outside organizations. Everybody can play a role in helping, you know, bring data, information, and ideas and things like that. But if you don't have some sort of strong infrastructure and desire within your state, you're going to be at a significant disadvantage.
Mm-hmm. So start building that infrastructure now.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Together with if you don't have an advocacy group already in your state, you should get some friends together and look at starting one or talking with some of the other like-minded groups, similar issue groups about what you guys can do. We already know their talking points. They try to mm-hmm. use the talking points on the right, which is we got to limit government interference, mm-hmm. which sounds good. That's what a lot of conservatives want. They just don't realize what's at stake. They talk about women's health care. They talk about here in Colorado, they made it all about access, which is absolutely insane because no one lacks access to abortion mm-hmm. in Colorado. But those are their talking points. That's their playbook. That's what they're going to do. It's been effective for them. And so if we can latch on and be prepared to fight, then we can continue to see more victories. There are other paths forward. Mm-hmm. So if you are in a state, let's say you're in one of these states, welcome to the club that just signed, or not signed, but voted in one of these constitutional amendments. There are creative things that brilliant thinkers within the movement have put together that are a little bit unconventional, but are ways that you can focus on local change to still save lives. I think a lot of people are discouraged about rightfully so about the losses in their state. But there's a variety of paths forward. So we want to, I think, shift gears and talk a little bit
Yeah, you guys are being pretty creative out there in Colorado. What do you have with sanctuary cities?
So yeah, we've had on this show, we've had Mark Lee Dixon on to talk about sanctuary cities for the unborn. He works down in Texas, but he travels all the time because this model has really taken off, especially in liberal states. So we have an interesting battle going on here in Colorado, and I'll try not to bore everyone with the details, but when Colorado legalized abortion through all 9 months of pregnancy 2 years ago, the late Dr. Leroy Carhart, this infamous late-term abortionist, set his sights on Colorado, specifically Pueblo, Colorado, and said, great, that looks like a great place to open my newest late-term clinic. And so the people of Pueblo rallied and said, not on our watch. So they tried to get Sanctuary City for the Unborn passed in Pueblo 2 years ago, knowing that they likely didn't have the votes on city council. And so it made it, I think, to second or third reading and then failed to pass. It was, you know, everyone was disappointed, but we did what we could to fight it. Well, then, you know, 6 months later, they have city council races and they booted out two people on city council that were against this ordinance and had identified pro-life candidates who said they were willing to run on this and to reintroduce it. So those seats flipped. We have supposedly a 5-member majority on city council now down in Pueblo, and it was reintroduced by the pro-life hero down there. And after hearing speeches from these two new guys that are on city council specifically for this issue about how pro-life they are and they're personally pro-life, but the state has already said that we can't have pro-life laws here, they voted against it. So Colorado for Life and some other groups here in Colorado are applying pressure to those city councilors and having people show up to testify every city council meeting from here on until whenever they relent to reintroduce the ordinance. So that's an example of local activism, if you will. We're having people email the city councilors, trying to apply pressure. They're essentially holding them to their campaign promises. This is why they ran. This is why they were elected. But we also have a couple different counties in the state that are looking to do this. And with the election results that came in yesterday, they're going to have the votes to do it. So we're excited to get the ball rolling on those. New Mexico is a very similar state, and they've already passed a couple different counties and city ordinances there. So that's kind of the path forward we're taking in Colorado, and I think is going to be a good path forward too for other states. The way it works, you should go back and listen to that episode. We'll try to link to that. But it enforces a federal law that's still on the books that prohibits the transportation in and out of different municipalities of abortion drugs and paraphernalia. So it essentially like de facto bans abortion without being an explicit abortion ban. So pretty creative.
Here's another one. I'll run this past you. Somebody here in Missouri posted on X what we should do now that we have this amendment approved, passed. We should, our next vote to the people should be, is a fetus a person or not?
Ooh.
And that's just the question, is the fetus a person or not? And if it passes, as if the answer is yes, then you can invoke the 14th Amendment.
Yeah, that's great.
That's, I mean, I don't claim to fully understand. I know we've talked about that on the show before. Mm-hmm. I don't fully understand how that would work, but I thought that's really creative. Mm-hmm. What an interesting political campaign that would be. Mm-hmm. That would really put the other side in a tough spot to say, you know, they'd have to come out with their clump of cells and all the nonsense. Mm-hmm. That's really creative. So it's good to see that there is some creativity on our side of people saying, okay, well, you know, the fight's not done. We're gonna change the fight.
Mm-hmm. And I think back too to all the pro-life heroes who have been in this fight for a long time and just the creativity that they had to employ under Roe. Mm-hmm. you know, I think even as recently as, you know, 7, 8, 9 months before Dobbs overturned Roe, the creativity of Texas to find a way to ban abortion without violating the precedent set by Roe, and they did it. So I just think as a movement, we have opportunity in the face of these heartbreaking losses. And it's, you know, it's easy to get into political talking mode and talk about wins and losses and, oh, my cause lost or my cause won. But it really is heartbreaking, and it really is discouraging for people, because this is an issue of life and death. And it shouldn't even be a debate, but unfortunately it is. But I think if we can, you know, take whatever time we need, especially for those who've been on the front lines the last several months fighting these battles, like, now's the time to regroup and maybe bring new people in who might have some creative ideas, talk with attorneys, talk with whoever you need to talk to about what the path forward looks like for you. But one thing's for certain that I hope the other side knows by now, we're not going to take this lying down. So just because they've enshrined the so-called right to abortion in these state constitutions, the pro-life movement is strong enough and passionate enough. We're going to figure out the next thing to do and get started working on it.
Yeah. And the biggest thing that it's sort of a common theme with us, and in a week or so, I'm going to have a chance to talk to several hundred state lawmakers. This is what I'm going to tell them. No matter where you live, you can support the people on the front lines. Mm-hmm. Those are your pregnancy centers, maternity homes, the Christian adoption folks. These are the ones every single day talking to her, talking to the couple who is making the choice, has the decision to make. Let's make sure that they have everything they need. The pregnancy centers, they have everything they need to do their job. And or they are protected and defended and know that we have their backs. They are under attack in many, many states. So if you live in those states, make sure they know that you've got their back. But let's make sure those groups on the front lines have everything they need to thrive in what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well said. Well, everyone, I hope that you have enjoyed by the time you're listening to this, 2 days now of no more political texts, no more election, get out the vote reminder calls. If you watch college football and you're watching football this weekend, enjoy not seeing political ads anymore. There's a lot to celebrate.
Yeah.
There's a lot to mourn. I think it's good that we reflect on our losses and come up with plans moving forward. And certainly Scott and I are both in states where we've experienced loss, and that's painful, especially because we are in this movement to win. But we made it through. We can regroup for later, come up with new strategies and plans. We'd love to hear what you're doing in your state. Mm-hmm. So if you have another creative idea, you know, we mentioned a couple, but we'd like to hear what you're doing. Cogency Strategic might be able to be a part of that, but we'd certainly like to be able to elevate and give voice to the different ideas that people are employing.
Yep, Scott, absolutely.
Any final thoughts?
Now make sure, I love your idea. Share your thoughts, what you're doing. We want to amplify the really good ideas. I think that's a fantastic idea. And while you're there, don't forget to hit subscribe. You smash that button. I'm still trying to get all the lingo down.
Yeah.
Smash the subscribe button and tell your friends, and we're going to keep this pro-life movement strong. And you know what? At the end of the day, we do have momentum. We have changed. I think we've turned a corner, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. So we're going to build on the momentum that we have started with this election.
Yep. Until next time, see you guys.